good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are, near or far, high or low. You're listening to the Coach G podcast, and listeners, I've got an extremely special guest, and just to warn the listeners in advance, you know, this is for my athletes that really like to study the game, develop their basketball IQ, because for me personally, I'm about to nerd out. Class is in session for me personally, but without further ado, you know how we do on the Coach G podcast. We have to introduce the guests the right way. So without further ado, let me cue the music and intro this amazing guest. Let me get my best David Stern on. Stepping on the court, we have a real student of the game who has spent over 12 years learning and teaching the game to athletes all over. He has been responsible for camp recruitment, development and motor skills development at the IMG Academy. He's been an assistant coach at the college level, which involved team scouting, offensive and defensive breakdown. He has also helped multiple high-level athletes at the highest level, as well as becoming a part of the USA basketball coaching staff. Listeners, please give a warm welcome. Stepping onto the court is Coach Justin.
Appreciate that intro, man. I don't know if anybody, including myself, ever deserves to come in with that music. That music is legendary.
Yes, sir. Indeed.
No, I really appreciate that.
No, of course. I mean, firstly, Coach, before we even get started, I must say thank you so much for giving up your time out of your busy schedule to be on the podcast. And two, before we even, you know, talk about basketball and just, you know, how you got into your role now, just talk to me just in terms of how is your physical and your mental right now?
Yeah, no, I'm in a great place right now. You know, I think the biggest thing for me is to always make sure that I am taking care of myself both mentally and emotionally.
Right.
There's been a lot of traction over the past couple of years, actually allowing men and younger boys to be able to be okay with expressing themselves emotionally.
Right.
You know, I'm originally from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And my family are all second generation Americans from Poland, and our ancestors were in the military. My father was in the military. My grandfather was in the military.
Wow.
My uncle was in the military. So when it came to feelings and emotions, there was no feelings and emotions.
Get your
job done. And you know, I think it's important that people find a balance in between their, you know, being able to say that it's okay that, you know, you're feeling a little stressed and things of that nature, but not getting overboard with it or carried away to where,
right,
you know, it's too much. I really think that, you know, one of the things that I try to live by the most, and this is going off on a tangent, but your mind has to be stronger than your feelings.
Say that so, again, Coach. I love where this is going already. That was a great quote. Why do you mean that?
What I really mean by that, if you can think about the decisions that you've made in your life, or, you know, any time where you've seen a little bit of struggle, a lot of the times when you look back on that, you can see that your decisions were made with your feelings and not your mind.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I do think it's important that you find that balance, but I do think it's important that you develop that mental resiliency as well. We can't get too carried away with it to where, you know, we're all about our feelings, because your mind, when you wake up in the morning, we all know, and I say this all the time to people, and sometimes they look at me a little funny, it's very easy to be successful. And I say that and people look at me funny, like, what are you talking about? Like, how can I easily be successful? If that was the case, everybody would have millions of dollars. Everybody would be in the NBA. Everybody would have a college basketball scholarship.
Right.
But what I mean by that is, you know what you have to do in order to get there. but the majority of the time, your feelings take over. Not all at one major place, but there's small little micro doses, small little decisions that you make that don't lead you down the path that you're trying to get to. Mm-hmm. So, for example, I tell all of my athletes, my biggest thing is win. And within win, there's that one. And that one stands for 1%. So if we're always getting 1% better, you're always seeing progress, you're going to make a huge change over time. But that goes both ways, right? So if you're always making decisions emotionally and going 1% backwards, then over time, that's going to take you further and further away from your dream or your goal.
Right.
So I'll give you just a small example. It's going to be the same scenario, two different outcomes, mm-hmm. right? So you wake up in the morning and you get out of bed and you go downstairs or you go into your kitchen, wherever the case may be, and you know you're supposed to make breakfast. You know that you should have made your bed, but you didn't. And instead, you're just kind of running late. So you hop in the car, you go about your business. Maybe you're going to school that day.
Right.
And you go to school, and on the way to school, you know, somebody on the bus is just driving you crazy. They're running their mouth, and you just don't feel like dealing with it. So you move on to the next thing. You get it into class, and you know, you get a bad grade on the assessment that you took. And then you go to lunch, and the lunch is terrible. You don't want to eat the lunch. Then you come home, and you know, your parents are on you because, you know, you didn't do your chores or whatever. And then you go to bed, and that entire day, you didn't see any success.
Mm.
Right? But I'm going to install just one small change that you can make right now. So anybody that's listening to this right now, if it's not done right now, do it right now if you're at home. But if you're not at home, when you get home, make this change. It's going to really set you up for success. And that is simply just to make your bed. And I know that sounds crazy, but think about it this way. The scenario I just gave you, you didn't see any success, none. But let's say we do that same exact day, but the only thing that we changed was we made our bed. So you still wake up, you forget to have your breakfast. All right, we didn't fuel our body, no big deal. Right, but we should have. We knew that's what we were supposed to do. We didn't. We go to school, still have that person messing with you on the bus, still get that bad assessment, still have a messed up lunch, come home, parents, you know, give you all sorts of grief.
Right.
And then you come home, back into your bedroom, and your bed is made. It looks comfortable. It's inviting. And you can see something throughout your entire day where you didn't have any wins. You had that win. That win is guaranteed to you. Saw something that you did that day where you were able to be successful.
Right. See, and oh man, this is absolutely beautiful because, you know, I've just started to read a book, and you know, for my athletes out there who just love to read, there's a book that I'm halfway through called The Obstacle Is the Way by Ryan Holiday, and he just really embraces and he shows different examples of, you know, for the average athlete, it could be a case of, you know what, this referee's always calling a foul on me, and they're seeing that referee as the obstacle or that hurdle that they can't quite get around, over or through. But the great athletes are able to use that obstacle as an advantage in terms of, okay, that means I need to make sure my footwork is there. Well, you know what, this referee likes to call pushing foul, so let me see if I can really be attacking, still focus on the finish, but kind of use that physical defender to my advantage and finish, you know. So I just kind of love the mindset and the examples that you gave, coach, you know, because that's the kind of difference between the average athlete and the great athlete, especially at the professional level. So I love that.
Well, you know, I think, you know, just to add on to that, the biggest thing for me, and I know DJ Sackman is this way as well, we work very closely together every single day to make sure that Hoop Study is the best product that it can possibly be for everybody out there. But
right.
You know, from the basketball perspective, but really what's big for the two of us is just human development, personal development, because, you know, these traits that we try to instill as coaches, there's a shelf life on every basketball player, every single one of them. And it's the lessons that you learn from that sport that we're using as a vehicle to drive you in the right direction. It's those lessons that are going to help you be a successful parent, a successful mentor, a successful human being. So right. It's not just the on-court stuff. It's the things that will transition or translate over into your life.
Right. Right. And I mean, just before we speak about the coach that you've become today, I mean, you kind of gave us a little brief, but I kind of want to know more just about before you became a coach. Kind of take us back to, you know, the first time a basketball was introduced to you.
Yeah, so like I said, I grew up in Northeast Philadelphia, and you know, sports in Philadelphia are everything. Okay. I mean, it's a therapeutic thing for people in Philadelphia because, you know, I mean, I love my hometown. I love my city. It's going through a really rough time right now. I mean, along with a lot of other places in the world, Philadelphia is just kind of in a bad spot right now. But it's kind of the same exact thing when you go to school and you have to worry about, you know, certain situations that you have to deal with. You know, at the end of the day, when you come home, you're able to play that sport and kind of escape those issues, or you're right. able to flip on the TV. And for me, it was watching Randall Cunningham, for all the people in, you nice. Know, in America, like Randall Cunningham, that was yes, my sir. Guy.
Yes,
like,
sir.
He was a great quarterback. Allen Iverson, that was my guy. Like
right.
all those, you know, athletes, Eric Lindros is a hockey player, Lenny Dykstra, who was a baseball player. Like in Philly, we have all the sports. You know, so like it's a way for us to escape, but it's also a blue collar city. It's okay. a place where, you know, even though we escape our issues, you know, that we're dealing with, when you hit that court, you're not exactly being greeted with sunshine and rainbows.
Right. Understood.
You know what I mean?
Understood.
So it's a place where we were able to learn a lot about life. You know, when times got tough, you know, when we played basketball, and I'm 35 right now, so I was born in 1987. Growing up in that era, we watched the greatest basketball player of all time in Michael Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when we watched Jordan, he was just coming off of being beat up by the Pistons, and
right.
nobody cared.
Yeah.
Nobody cared. There was nobody there to hold his hand
nope.
or anybody else's hand and say, oh, it's going to be okay. So when you went and played on the blacktop or in any, and that was the other thing is, you know, we didn't have these gyms with AC and stuff like that.
Or, tell them, coach.
I mean, I'm telling
tell
you, like, there was a point in time where we moved away from Philly later on in my life, and we lived in the country in Virginia, and I was playing on dirt basketball courts, and
get
I would come
done.
In three shades darker just from like all the dirt just piled up on
it.
My hands and legs.
I love
and I don't say that to, you know, say like, oh, we had it so much tougher or anything like that.
Right.
What I mean by that is that it helped build that character.
There
and I thought that, you know, with those experiences where if you didn't win, you might not be playing again that day.
Right.
So, you know, it built that character to where I'm gonna do everything possible when I'm on the court, or I'm not getting back on the court. And I think that we've gotten away from that a little bit, and it's not the athlete's fault at all. And I think that's a big mistake that a lot of adults make today, is they put the blame on the kids, like it's the kids out there raising themselves and coaching themselves.
Right.
Because they're not, it's us. I think that as the adults, we've gotten a little bit softer on them. And, you know, I really liked how growing up in the 90s and early 2000s that like we still had that grit where, you know, you could foul me, I'm not even gonna call it, because
right.
I know if I call this foul, we're about to be on this court arguing
for
a,
long time.
A
yep.
clean 10 minutes and
I'd
rather just take the hit and get
right.
stronger and be able to finish through it than
exactly.
to argue with you about why it was or was not a foul.
Right. Right. And even you know, you just kind of mentioned something which just shows, again, the beauty of sport, and you're constantly learning about yourself, like in terms of what were some of the things when you was playing basketball, you know, and just being dedicated to the sport. And like you were saying, you know, you wasn't always calling fouls, you were just getting along with it. In hindsight, when you kind of reflect now, what was you learning about your character, or what were some of the traits that was being built within you that you later took on as you started to play the game more?
Yeah, so, you know, the interesting thing about me was I was not that great of an athlete. And to this day, I'm not a natural athlete. But there's one thing that I've always been great at, and that was working extremely hard.
Here we go.
And that was that was instilled to me by my family. You know, my father would, you know, ask me to knock down a wall, clear it out, so this way we could fix something. He'd come home and say, "How come the house is still standing?" There was a standard that he wanted me to live up to, and that was simply, if you're going to do something, make sure that you go above and beyond what was asked of you.
That's key.
And so when it came to the sports that I played, basketball, football, and golf, and I say football, I mean soccer. I played those three sports, and I wasn't a natural athlete, but I knew that I was going to work harder than everybody else.
Right.
And so that's what allowed me to stay around the game. And, you know, because of that being built within me, it's allowed me to travel the world and see a lot of things simply because of basketball.
So, I mean, as you, you know, continued on just playing basketball and you're kind of traveling, you're meeting new players, you're learning, you know, new ways to play offense and defense, and you're meeting some of these coaches. Who were some of the coaches that you saw early on in your playing career, and how did they impact your thinking of the game, but also your playing style?
And so, you know, it's actually a really interesting topic, and I didn't know it was very unique until I met more people.
Okay.
So I went to 9 different schools growing up. I moved around a lot.
Okay.
And so I never really built a long relationship with any coaches. And the one thing that I did run into, and this is kind of amazing when you think about how many different places I went to, is that, and I don't mean this in any way other than for it being factual,
right,
I didn't have any good coaches. And my teachers at the schools that I went to weren't great teachers either. And I know that kind of comes off as accusatory or, you know, that way, but it's actually just a reflection on what I've looked back at now of the things that I have learned as I've gotten older. And because of that, I really fell behind. And so I, like I said, I always worked really hard, but I was always really hungry too.
Right.
I always wanted to learn. And so what I found was, and this kind of shaped who I was as a coach, what I found was when you asked questions of coaches or teachers and they didn't know the answer and they told you to be quiet, that was a red flag.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's literally what would happen. You would ask them a question, and they're like, "Stop asking questions. I don't." And it was because they didn't know.
Right.
And
right.
So, as I got older, instead of settling for where I was, because that's still going to be the case across, you know, the world, people are going to find themselves in a location just because that's what they were born into, or that's the best that their parents could afford. Instead of settling for where you are and accepting that as being what, you know, the fact is or the truth is, you have to question things.
Mm-hmm.
You have to reach out to people and ask for help, because people will help you if you ask them.
It's true.
But if you're not willing to help yourself, if you're not willing to go above and beyond and branch out, I mean, people aren't going to help you then, in my experience. Maybe I'm wrong there, but I just think that in order for you to grow from those things, I think you have to reach out. And that's what happened when I got to college. When I went to Radford University, and high school, I went to 4 different high schools. I got cut at the one high school. I didn't get to play there. But because I got cut, I just joined in as a manager.
Okay.
And, you know, I was just making sure that, you know, I stayed involved with the program. And, you know, after I did that, I went to college and I started a club basketball team. Because okay. I knew I wasn't good enough to play in college.
Right.
At the time, I just wasn't. I didn't have coaches to tell me how to practice, so the only thing I relied on was watching people do things and had people kick my ass in basketball and then trying to replicate it. That was the only way I knew how to learn.
Right.
So, because YouTube didn't come out until 2005, and that was the year that I graduated high school, and YouTube didn't become what it is today until probably 10 years later.
Right. It took a while, so it's true.
Yeah, so those resources weren't there. So we started our club basketball team at Bradford. We had two outrageously successful years. We went undefeated 2 years in a row. And Brad Greenberg, who drafted Allen Iverson for the 76ers, was hired as our new head coach at Bradford. And I just told him, I was like, hey man, look, I just want to get involved. I'll be a manager like I did back in high school. I'll be a manager, do whatever you want. I just want to learn. And so that was the first time where I was around high level basketball minds. And that was a life changing experience for me. So, you know, just being around Rick Hall, Brad Greenberg, Ali Tan, and Cedric Smith, like those, and Ross Condon, and then later Chad Myers, like all of those guys really changed the way that I thought about the game of basketball. And actually being able to be around high-level people
right.
really changed everything. Because once I started to understand the game, as bad as I thought I was at basketball, I wasn't bad. It was my basketball IQ that was bad, that was holding me back.
Right. Right. And what I mean, when you got to that level where you're just around these high-level thinkers and you're having conversations and they're really just explaining to you, you know, how to read and react, whether it's coming off of screen or they're just teaching you concepts offensively and defensively, how was it like just being a sponge? And for you at that time, how was you observing your coaches? Was it through asking questions, or was it through you just observing how they explain something? Is it in the training sessions? Is it in film? Like, what were some of the ways you was kind of picking up on some of their coaching habits?
Yeah, so it really was just baptism under fire, to be honest with you. Right. It was pretty much, I showed up, and it's so funny too, man, because like I can look back and remember some of the dumb things that I did. And for people who think that, you know, the small details don't matter, and people who tell you, you know, don't sweat the small stuff, they could not be further off. I mean, it is just so wrong. I don't know who came up with that, but it's the dumbest thing, that one of the dumbest things that I've ever heard. And right. I'll give you two quick examples, right? So we're at practice, first time, the Dedman Center's getting redone. We're in Peters Hall, a Division I basketball program. We're in a small gym that looks like you're at a middle school, like a primary school, like super small. And nobody told me what my job was. They were like, yo, just show up at practice and we'll put you to work. I'm like, all right, cool. So Greenberg's in there coaching and he's walking them through stuff. And I'm just kind of over there. I'm paying attention, but I'm shooting a basketball.
And okay.
You can hear the basketball kind of hitting the rim. Well, like I said, I wasn't around any high-level programs.
Right. Before
that. Right. So I'm just over here doing that. And he turns around and he looks at me. So I'm not going to curse because, I mean, but he turned around and used some choice words and I was just like, okay, so there's your first lesson.
Right.
Make sure you're paying attention and you're quiet so that head coach can talk. All right, cool. Right, so we move on to our first game, and we were in Peters Hall, super hot. The AC was off, and so, like, again, this is a Division I program. AC's off, small gym, guy falls down on the floor, and the ref is trying to like wipe up the sweat, and he turns and he looks at the bench. We had three managers, all three of us sitting right there on the bench, and the ref looks at us, and I'm looking at him like, what's the ref on?
You should be doing this.
I'm like, what do you want, man? Right. And so Ross Condon, who was our director of basketball operations at the time, ended up going on to coach at Boston University and then Penn State. Like, great nice. Dude, high-level nice. Basketball mind. He played at Villanova under Jay Wright.
Wow.
Comes down and grabs a towel, sprints out onto the court in his suit and starts wiping up the sweat and then runs off. And I'm like, all right, cool. Ross got it. And then after Ross hit the bench, Brad Greenberg walks down to the end of the bench and again starts using some choice words, but pretty much ends with, if you don't get off your butt and do that, like Ross did, you'll never be around basketball again a day in your life. And wow. I was just like, all right, now I know what it takes. And so being able to actually, like, even though I was a manager, that's the cool thing about being a part of a team, is that you learn and grow with the team as much as anybody else, even if you are just a manager. So like the kids that end up getting cut, you know, from their high school team, their middle school team, whatever the case may be, even though you step in as a manager, and don't get me wrong, it wasn't all like, oh, I'm a part of the team, everybody loves me. Like,
right,
those players, until they gain your respect, they're still just going to look at you like you're the manager.
100%.
But the good thing is like, you can go in, you do that, you learn from it. And if you're still young enough and you can still try out, next year come back and kick their ass after you learned everything.
Right.
You know, so that's kind of the cool thing about it. But yeah, so I learned from them, but that was my first learning experience. Right. So that was the first time I saw high-level basketball. And then I went to New Zealand and I worked for Andre Lamanis and a couple of other high-level coaches out there. And the cool thing is I got that opportunity because when I was at Radford, we won the Big South Championship for the first time, or for the second time in our school's history.
Man.
And so I went over there. I started working for the New Zealand Breakers. A lot of people know who they are now because of RJ Hampton.
Right.
But before then, nobody really knew who they were. But when I got there, I helped them win their first championship, and then they went to win two more when I came back to the States.
Nice.
And so, you know, going over there, learning from that community. So now I learned from Radford for 2 years. I go to New Zealand. I learned from them for a year. And then I come back to the States. I graduate college and I get my first high school coaching position. And I learned from Bobby Wolf at Frank W. Cox High School. And then I went to Salem, Virginia, because I took a new position out there. And I was talking to the head coach there. His name is Kevin Garst at Salem High School. And he asked me a question. And I didn't realize the way that I was thinking about basketball until he asked me this question. He said, what's your basketball philosophy and how do you want to coach here? And we were sitting at McAdoo's in Roanoke, Virginia, and I was just like, you know, I don't have a basketball philosophy, but I'm here to just coach and do whatever you want. And I was thinking about that after I said it, and I meant that sincerely and wholeheartedly. And I was thinking about that afterwards, and I was just like, I don't have a philosophy, and I've had to learn this game every way possible by just asking questions.
Right.
And I have learned from such a variety of people that my basketball education is pretty cool.
Right.
Because I was talking to Garst about it, and he was like, I've never heard anybody say that to me before.
Right.
He's like, usually people come up to me and they say, oh, I do this and I make sure that I have X, Y, and Z taken care of.
Right.
He was like, and usually I just accepted that because when I played at Hampton, Sydney, this is him talking. When I played at Hampton, Sydney, we learned from Tony Shaver, and Tony Shaver learned from Dean Smith, and Dean Smith had this way of doing it, and that was the only way of doing it. And so when we were at practice, we had to do X, Y, and Z, and that was nothing else. It was just that.
Right.
And so he was just like, we were brainwashed. And I said to him, I was like, yeah, I mean, that's cool that, you know, you got to learn from Shaver and that he learned from Dean Smith because he's one of the greatest minds of all time. I was like, but what if a situation comes up that doesn't fit into your equation?
That's a good question.
And he said to me, he was like, yeah, that's usually when we lose.
Okay.
And so that's kind of how I based my basketball coaching philosophy from there. I just kind of took my experience, and the one thing that I do every single time I approach a situation is I assume that I know nothing.
Mm-hmm. That's a good base.
You know, because I feel like you can always learn. You can always learn, right? So even if, so for example, you know, if you're coming off of a pick and roll,
right?
A lot of the times, you know, people will tell you, all right, you can turn the corner and do X, Y, and Z, right? Well, what if I decide that if I turn the corner, I'm going to decide to pass and then get it back and have that be a boomerang instead of just turning the corner?
Right.
And if you've never learned that before, but you tell me that every single time I come off of that screen, I have to turn the corner, like, it limits you.
Right.
Right. So I don't think that you should put limits on things. Like, I think that if you have a question, you should seek out an answer. And if that individual, there's two parts to this. If that individual doesn't know the answer, instead of just saying, like, I don't know, or don't ask me any questions, I think they should find out the answer too.
Very true. Very true. They say, discovery trumps disclosure, which is quite interesting. And how much of a balance, I mean, especially the level that you're at now, how much is it of a balance, or maybe not, in terms of you explain concepts just enough so that they get the basic stuff down, but there's still room for them to explore, make mistakes, and come to the answer themselves? Like, how do you go about teaching some of those concepts to some of your athletes?
Yeah, I don't think anything can replace failure, you know, and discovery. I don't think anything can replace that. So, you know, going back to what I was talking about, how I grew up playing, you know, if I was playing 21 against somebody, if I was playing one-on-one against somebody, I didn't have anybody to give me the answers. I had to figure it out as I went along. And if I always succeeded, I would have never gotten better.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's true.
So I had to fail in order to become better.
Right.
So, you know, what I like to do is I like to give a base, right? Like, give them the base knowledge.
Right.
And let them go through it. And then if they fail and they fail again and they can't figure out the answer, then I'll ask them, you know, what'd you do wrong here? Okay, now what could possibly be the solution to this? So let them try to see if they can work their way through it before I interject.
Right.
Because again, like I said, I personally like to go into things like assuming that I don't know everything. That's not me saying, no, I don't know the answer. That's me assuming that I don't know the answer. Because at times, we might, like, for example, I might run a set play versus a defense, and then we go to run it, and it may have looked like it was successful, but one of my players might come and tell me, like, the defense is doing this, so let's do this instead. Now, an egotistic individual might look at that person and say, shut up and do what I told you
exactly.
to do.
Yeah, it's true.
But instead, if you could say, all right, no, that makes sense, let's try what you said, now you've gotten better.
Right.
You know, so I just think it's important to allow people to fail. And that goes across the board. So coaches too. So if an athletic director, for example, who hires the coach, gets on the coach every single time that they fail, they're never really going to feel comfortable enough to be in that position.
Right.
Right? Like, think about how many coaches, like, look at Coach K and Roy Williams and Dean Smith. Those probably, and, you know, all the other big names out there, they probably wouldn't be big names if they were fired like they are today.
This is true. Man, it's... And, see, your perspective, Coach, is very interesting because, I mean, just how your upbringing to where you are now and you just being humble enough and real enough to be like, you know what, I might not be the best athlete, I might not be the best shooter, the best player on defense, but I can still, in some shape or form, learn how to contribute to a team. And that's kind of gotten you to where you are today, because, you know, some athletes feel like if they're not dropping out the gym or if they're not the best shooter, they kind of, you know, come to the end of the road and think, okay, maybe I can't contribute to a team. But there are so many ways you can actually contribute to a team, whether that's learning the game, whether that's being in the film session, whether that's just, you know, walking with coach or just learning what you can in practice sessions. So I just absolutely love that side of you, but also the fact that, again, and especially as coaches, this is something that I'm really starting to practice, is that I'm still a student of the game. Even a player is still a student of the game, and they don't assume that they know everything. There are still new things to learn, and there are still new ways to explore different concepts. So I love that. Absolutely love that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that might be one of the, I don't know, I don't want to call it a misconception or downfall or whatever the case may be. Like, people have to understand, because I have people reach out to me now and ask me, you know, how do you do all your learning? Like, man, like, I learn every single day. I'm watching film all the time. I'm asking people questions all the time. Like, that's the biggest thing. You have to take ownership for your learning.
Right, 100%.
You know, you have to go ask those questions. You have to study the game of basketball if you want to be successful, if this is for you. It's not for everybody.
Right.
I mean, it really isn't. Like, if you just love playing this game and you're a fan of the game, like, you don't have to do that. But if you want to be great, then that's what you have to do. And you have to have a level of grit and a level of determination, because you're going to face setbacks along the way.
Indeed.
You know, and you cannot be afraid. You have to believe in yourself. You have to believe, like, one of my high school coaches, out of the four schools that I went to, one of my high school coaches told me that I should give up basketball because I don't have a future in it.
Wow.
Which is hilarious.
Right.
Because
right.
I have done more in my, so this past year was my first year as a head varsity coach.
Nice.
And that was my first year, and I took our team back to, I shouldn't say I took them, but, you know, I was the head coach of the team that went back to the state tournament for the first time in 26 years.
Man.
So this individual coached at that high school for over 30 years, and I had more success in 1 year than he did in 30 years.
Man.
So, you know, there's going to be people that don't believe in you. There's going to be 100%. People who don't think that you're good enough, but you have to believe in yourself. Because if you believe in yourself, nobody else is ever going to believe in you.
Very true. Very, very true. And especially because, I mean, the thing that brought me to your page especially is, I mean, because I'm really, well, I mean, for the past 3 to 4 years, I've really just been getting into film and kind of just comparing, you know, NBA style basketball to EuroLeague and the set plays and decoys, goal screens, help defense, and just learning about all these different concepts and terminologies. When you're studying film, Coach, you know, how would you say you filter out, like, especially during the season, when you're studying film, what's your typical process of breaking down film, but also how do you make the footage digestible for the athletes to take in?
Yeah, so there's different ways that I watch film, and there's different things that I'm looking for. So it really depends on what the goal or what kind of outcome I'm looking for, okay. Right? So if, for example, if we are scouting another team, I'm not going to, like, there's sections that I break it down into. So I'll look at their offense. So while I'm watching film, I'm just looking at their offense and how it flows, how it initiates, and things of that nature.
Right.
And then I'll get into their defensive tendencies, right? So what are their defensive tendencies? Go through that. And then I'll look at personnel. And so if it's strategically placed out like that, then it makes it easier for you. It's almost like a checklist, like, okay, I'm doing a scout. I need to knock out X, Y, and Z, right? And then I'll get it to the player. See, and here's the other thing. A good friend of mine coached Division I basketball for a very long time, and he's highly intelligent, and he writes all of his scouts.
Okay.
And the athletes today don't read anything. If right. it's not on their phone.
This is true.
So is true. While that written scout has highly valuable information, it's not digestible for the athlete.
Right. Right.
So there's a disconnect there. Mm-hmm. Right? So like for me, what I did was, and it's interesting too, because there's an issue with it as well. So for me, what I did was I took all my scouts and I put them on video. And I made them shorter clips, and I only showed them what they had to know, right? The issue was, is I had a couple of older people on my staff.
Okay.
Who did not work that way. Right. So the coaches, they wanted a written document.
Yes.
So there's a disconnect there. So right. I think it's something where you have to make sure, that you are feeding all parties, but you're not getting so carried away that you don't have a structure to what you're doing.
Right
now, right. if I'm watching a video and I'm looking for a skill, then what I literally do is I refer to the higher party. I literally will call up DJ and I'll say, yo, what are you looking at here? Because his brain is programmed to look at everything from a skill standpoint, and right. he looks at details that you, or I'm not gonna say you, but that I would never look at.
Right.
Right? So that's the way that I look at offenses and defenses and how they flow on the court, is I look at things that most people would look at. DJ is a higher power when it comes to that knowledge of skill development. So I refer to him and I let him teach me.
Okay.
So, and I think, again, that just goes back to my philosophy that I don't assume that I know everything, because how I would have originally taught, you know, a pro hop or a drift or things of that nature, maybe DJ teaches it a different way and I know he's better at that. So what I'm going to do is like, yo, this is what I see. Do you see it the same way or do you see something different?
Right.
So the same thing goes for people who are watching film. Right? Like you pull up film and you say like, all right, this is what I see. Whoever you trust, whoever you think is a higher knowledge, take what you saw and throw it at them and ask them, what do you think about what I see? And one of three things are going to happen. One, they're going to tell you what you didn't see. Two, you're going to show them something that they didn't see. Or three, they're going to ignore you, and that's the individual that you cut out of your circle.
Okay, I like that. I like that. Okay. And like, especially, I mean, you've been in so many different basketball environments, not just in the States, but internationally as well. So, I mean, you're probably the best person to ask this question in terms of how would you describe, you know, what a good basketball culture look and sounds like?
I think they have to be a great person first.
Okay.
You know, I mean, if so, for example, I could know everything that there is to know about basketball, but if everything that I'm giving to you isn't being received, then I'm completely useless.
This is true.
Right. So if there's a lot of coaches from who were taught from a different time that can't get across to players, because when they go to communicate with them, the athletes aren't receiving it the right way. So maybe they come in and they're yelling at them and they're making them just run. And the athletes are just kind of looking at them like, yo, what are you doing? Like, I completely tuned you out an hour and a half ago.
Right,
and right now, all I'm doing is working on my cardio.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
So I think that you have to be a great person of integrity, right? Like, I can't tell my athletes, yo, you need to be in the weight room lifting, and then I never do it.
True.
Right? Like, that doesn't make any sense, because that's me. I'm in there with my athletes lifting. I'm on the court with my athletes, you know, helping them to the best of my ability. Now, that doesn't have to be everybody, right? Like, maybe physically you're not able to do it. Maybe skillfully you're not able to demonstrate something. But the other part to being a high level coach is being able to employ people who can do what you can. Right? Because you have to be comfortable with that. You have to be comfortable enough with yourself to know that it's okay to admit that I don't know something or that I can't do something.
Right. Exactly.
Right? Like, exactly. DJ and I have a group of coaches that we talk to in Japan every other Friday. And, you know, we get on there, they ask skills questions, DJ's in there just chopping it up, giving, you know, all kinds of great information. And then a coach will ask, like, well, what do you do when you face a 2-3 zone? And DJ will immediately stop and be like, JB, you got this, go ahead.
Nice.
You know what
nice,
I mean? And
yeah.
Like, as a coach, that's what you need to be able to do.
Right.
You need to be able to take a step back and be like, you know what? I don't know the answer to this, but Coach D does, so go ask him.
Right. Right.
And the other part of it is just continually being a student. And, you know, coaches today, you know, unless you're on a high-level staff, and when I mean high-level staff, I mean, like, you know, financially high-level to
right.
where, like, you can hire, like, you know, a sports performance coach, director of basketball operations, a video coordinator, assistant coach. Like, unless you can afford to pay for all those things, mm-hmm. which a lot of people can't, then you need to be a student of everything.
Right, exactly.
Like, that's the reason why director of basketball operations and video coordinators, like, that's why they get high-level jobs, because they know how to do everything.
Right.
It's not, I mean, they end up learning the game, you know, and they're really smart from a basketball IQ standpoint, but what they're really good at is they know how to run a program. Because those are the guys who are cutting film. Those are the guys who are booking hotels.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the guys who are sorting out transportation, sorting out meals, figuring out how to make sure that the guy who isn't getting his or girl isn't getting their you know, their academics taken care of. They've got that sorted out. You know, as the head coach of a high-level program, you're the face of the program, good
right.
or bad.
Right.
You know what I mean? So you're taking all sorts of heat, and you have to put out those fires as they come your way. But the rest of the stuff, you don't have time for. And I used to, honestly, until just the past couple years, I used to think that head coaches, like, oh man, their job's easy. All they do is tell their assistants what to do, and then they just kick it in their office until it's, you know, time for practice or a game.
Right,
man,
right.
They get paid a lot of money for a reason.
Yes, it's true. It is true. And I'm super curious, like, from your standpoint, because I find that, I mean, like you were saying, you know, when you was coming up, there was no YouTube, you know, you just kind of had to learn on your own, or if you was fortunate enough to have a coach, you could learn from him. Now we're in a climate where, you know, you can learn a drill on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, you know, you have high level coaches everywhere. But I mean, at least from my standpoint, the amount of information that is out there, not every player is on that level of information that's out there, if that makes sense, in terms of, you would think that the average athlete would know how to come off a screen, or the importance of the angle of a screen, or the importance of no middle defense, or just different concepts, but it's not always the case. So for yourself, you know, with some of these athletes that you're working on a day-to-day basis, how would you describe how they think the game of basketball?
Well, I think the biggest issue that we have today, you know, like you said, it's not the amount of information. We got more information than we've ever had in our, you know, history.
Right.
But the issue is, and this is what DJ and I with Hoop Study, we try to change, is we try to give people structure.
Okay.
Right? Like, it used to be when you needed the answer to something, you went to the library and you checked in the card catalog to find the encyclopedia that gave you the answer. So everything was already structured and organized.
Right.
Now, you don't even know what a card catalog is, and you've never seen an encyclopedia. All
sure.
You've seen is YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram.
Right.
And you go in and you're just scrolling and scrolling and scrolling, and you're just getting thousands of videos that are not interrelated or connected in any way other than the fact that they're all basketball.
Right.
So it's not organized. So, like, it's not a surprise that kids don't know how to read a defense or come off of a screen, because the issue is they hop on Instagram and they just saw, you know, a coach talking about turning the corner on a pick and roll, and then they scroll down and the next video they see is Zion dunking, and then they scroll down and the next video they see is Steph shooting a three, and then they scroll down and the next video they see is somebody blocking a shot. And so out of that, the only thing that they may have learned was how to turn the corner, but they don't know anything else.
Right.
They just saw somebody coming off the screen and said, yo, this is turn the corner. Like, all right, cool.
Right.
like, it's not organized. So that's why we created the Hoop Study Academy.
Nice.
And with the Hoop Study Academy, now everything's organized. Now we have our Pick and Roll Academy. Now we have our Moving Without the Basketball Academy. Now we have our Forward IQ Academy,
right,
our Point Guard IQ Academy. So now if you're a point guard, here are a lot of things that you are going to have to know to be a high-level point guard.
Right.
So now I'm not going through TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and every other social media website. I can just focus in on one area, look at that, and be like, okay, if I do this academy, this is going to put me in a great position to become really good at my position.
Right. And just even staying on Hoop Study, because I think what you guys do a great job of doing is you apply the skills that are needed. Really break it down in terms of footwork, body position, change of pace, but then, and again, you just make it so digestible, you know, on just one, the different types of sets and plays that are out there, but two, again, I mean, for me, I kind of just look at some of, like, the importance of how to come off a screen, or, you know, like, in certain teams rule, we'll run a decoy set to get a shooter open on the weak side or things like that. So again, it's short clips that are super digestible. But how did Hoop Study come about? And secondly, how have you measured the impact of Hoop Study as well?
Yeah, so, and this is a good teaching point for everybody as well. We failed a lot.
Right.
That's what they don't know. We failed a lot. And that's something, even with myself, like, you know, I'm not going to go off on too far of a tangent with this, but like the whole way that I got involved with Hoop Study, I think this is a really important lesson, which is the reason why I'm talking about it.
Right.
So Kevin Sutton is one of my mentors. I met Kevin Sutton for the first time, like face to face, 3 years ago, but I actually started working with Kevin Sutton in 2010.
Wow.
So basically what I did was when I got back from New Zealand, I knew I wanted to be involved with basketball. I emailed every single coach, Division 1, 2, and 3 in America.
Jeez.
Every single one of them.
Wow.
Right? And Kevin Sutton was one of those people, and we just built that relationship. So he, fast forward, he was at University of Rhode Island. He was at Georgetown when I emailed him. Then he ends up at University of Rhode Island. And he told me, he was like, yo, I'm about to do some scouts. cut up some film, give me a scouting report, and have it to me by the end of the week. I'm like, wait, what?
What? Yeah.
Exactly. I'm like, I've never done that before. Like, what is this guy talking about? Like, I want to be a college basketball coach, so I don't know what he's talking about, but I'm going to figure it out.
Right.
Right? And so, like, I sent it to him, and he was like, okay, this, this, and this, take all that crap out. I'm like, all right, cool. Because, like, when he tells me to do that, I'm just like, all right, well, I'm going to make sure this is the best scout ever. I sent it to him. My first scout was, like, 25 minutes long.
Oh, wow.
Right? Because I'm like, I'm not going to miss anything.
Right.
Right? So I got all of that wrong, only to find out by the end of the year, after Kevin Sutton told me to do that, by the end of the year, I was doing scouting reports for 6 different Division I programs.
Jeez. Wow, man.
Right, because this is the part that I really want people to lock in on. If you if you don't know somebody, a lot of people are afraid to talk to those people. Like, so for example, people ask me, how do you know Alan Stein? How do you know Jay Billis? How do you know Kevin Sutton? How do you know, all these different people? And I'm like, well, I've introduced myself to them.
Right.
And they're like, wait, you just talk to them? Like, yeah. So if I talk to them and they just tell me, you know, get out of here. I don't know who you are. I don't have time for you. I still don't know them.
Right. Right.
But if I sit back and I'm like, man, I would love to get to know Tommy Amaker. And that's all I ever say. I'm never going to know Tommy Amaker.
True.
Right. So to get back to the point that you asked me about. So we failed a lot. I was making, you know, coaching videos. I was like, I made the coaching videos for my brain because of the way that I work. Like, I look at everything and I'm like, okay, in order for me to remember this, I'm really good if I write it down and then I walk through it. So I was just like, well, how can I write it down on the screen? So I figured that out, right? So I started making videos to where I would pause it, I'd put the diagram on the screen, and I'd talk people through it because that's what I needed. Like, I wasn't the type of person who you could tell me a play once and then I would go do it. Now I can do it just because I've repped it out so much, right? So I built those videos and I didn't see a lot of success on Instagram. I was like, dude, what the hell is going on? Like, this is great content. Like, why don't people like this? And then I was like, oh wait, reels are only a minute long.
Okay.
Everybody liked reels. So I was just like, all right, how can I get this play down to a minute?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's the challenge, then,
so I started calling them the timeouts, right? So like I would just do it in, I was like, all right, I gotta get everything that I need to say. I gotta cut it back short and make it more digestible for people. So in other words, I had to shut the hell up and start doing my job better. And that's what I just started doing. And so like for Hoop Study, same exact thing. What I said that I did with Kevin Sutton, did the same exact thing with DJ Sackman. During the pandemic, when the pandemic hit, I hit up DJ Sackman and I was like, yo, this is who I am. This is what I do. And I want to work with you.
Right.
So I started doing it. DJ liked it. And now I work with him full time.
Nice. See, just all it takes is, and you know, I can just tell, because I've almost had that, you know, like, just like, how do you know this person? They'd be like, well, I just message them, or I just like ask them if you're free. Wait, it's that simple? Now, bear in mind, it's not always gonna get you connected to that person, but if you just take initiative and just don't be afraid to ask the question, you'll be surprised where you end up at the end of it. So. Oh man, it's just super interesting. Now, I mean,
No, I didn't mean to cut you off, but like, you know, another great example. So Jacob Gilliard, right?
Right.
Jacob played at Richmond for the past 4 or 5 years, something like that. It may have even been 6 years. And I think that's because of the pandemic. But Jacob Gilliard, I did 6 or 7 scouting reports on him. Something like that. And then now he's playing for the Golden State Warriors in the Summer League.
Right.
And I saw that and I reached out to him on Instagram. I'm like, yo, congratulations. And I just told him, like, I've been scouting you for the past X amount of years. And I just wanted to let you know, if you needed any help with film work while you're in the Summer League, hit me up. And that's literally all I sent him that on Instagram. And he hit me back. And since his first three games now, I've done film work for him.
Nice.
You know what I mean? And like, nice. It's now, granted, that helps because of who I am now and like the things that I've done. But again, it's one of those things where like, if you don't reach out, why are people going to talk to you? Who are you?
This is true. This is true. Now, I mean, as more experience is gained, what new thoughts or conversations are you now starting to have, Coach?
One of the biggest things that, you know, DJ and I talk about a lot now is emotional intelligence.
Okay.
I think that's, again, like I said before, like basketball is just the vehicle.
Right.
Right. You know, we're trying to develop people holistically. We're trying to make sure that they're set up for success, you know, in life. So that's kind of the biggest thing. But, you know, I talk to people pretty much about everything, you know, like if I'm saying, you know, we're facing a 2-3 zone, like, how do you beat this? Like, or, you know, how can we change this up? So I really think the biggest thing is just asking questions and assuming that you know nothing. And then from there, you can be really successful.
Right. Right. And just before we get into the third and fourth quarter, which I like to call the quick hitter segment, I mean, how would you describe? Because, I mean, I could just tell that there were some people listening and being like, wow, I didn't realize it takes that much just to break down film. Or, you know, you have to kind of go from a 10-minute breakdown to, okay, how can I get everything that I want to say in 1 minute, and it doesn't sound compressed, like there's still room to breathe and you actually understand what is being said in the video. So for yourself, Coach, how would you describe the unseen grind of coaches?
It's never ending, right. It's not for everybody, and I say that just because there's a lot of sacrifices that people don't understand that coaches make. You know, I actually left my head coaching position, so this way I could spend more time with my son, because nice. I was starting to understand that I could make a higher impact, you know, through the internet now and through Hoop Study.
Right.
And I really love being with my son more nice. Than anything.
That's what's up.
So,
that's
you know, up. Now I'm able to have the best of both worlds. I loved my guys at Indian River High School. I still love them. I still talk to them. But, you know, being able to be with my son every single day, that was a sacrifice that I was willing to make.
Shout out to the son, boy. I can tell he's going to be a young man that's going to be potentially hooping soon. Who knows?
Who knows? So he doesn't have to be a hooper, but he has to do something.
Right. What would you say are the top three qualities of a leader?
Top three qualities of a leader. I think you have to be open-minded. I think you have to be sincere and honest and empathetic. Like you have to be able to put yourself in other people's shoes and try to see, you know, an issue from their point of view.
I like that. And kind of moving in to the third quarter, which I call the quick hitter segment, I'm just going to ask you some rapid fire questions, Coach, and we're going to see where you're at with them. The first one I'm probably super curious to ask you is, you know, through your coaching career so far, I mean, you've, you know, speaking with high level coaches, you train high level athletes. For yourself, what have you gathered so far is a skill that is taught by many but only mastered by a few?
The basics. The basics. Too many people start with it and then go away from it really quickly. The basics are, they always work. Kobe focused on them.
100%.
And Jordan focused on them, and it made them really successful. It's not all the combo moves and all that other crap. It's the basics.
Right. Understood. Next one. Best piece of advice you ever received?
Keep your mind where your feet are. Try to stay present. Right? Like, I think that's probably one of the best.
Coach, I'm gonna have to have you say that again, because that actually caught me by surprise. I love that one. Keep your mind where your feet are. I love it.
Yeah, it's a great one. I got that from Alan Stein. He's a great.
So the last two before we get into the fourth quarter, the next one is, if it wasn't for basketball, I wouldn't have learned filling the blank about myself.
If it wasn't for basketball, I wouldn't have known. I don't know, man. My life is so intertwined with basketball. I mean, I hate to give basketball all the credit for it, but I guess if it wasn't for basketball, I wouldn't have known how resilient I am.
Nice. Okay. Okay. And the final one, and feel free to take your time with this one, is, what would the title of your autobiography be?
That's actually funny. I've thought about this. But Aim for Swishes is, I think, the way that it, or what it's going to be, either that or Win. But I think Aim for Swishes is it. And what I mean by that is, a lot of the times when people go into, you know, a new project or a task, you know, kind of going back to what I was saying, what my father expected out of me.
Right.
A lot of people do the bare minimum. I got an assignment that I need to do. Like, I'm just going to turn it in. Instead, if you aim for swishes and you come up short, you're still going to finish on a high note, right? Mm-hmm. So like when I shoot, when I go to the gym and I work out, I aim for swishes. And even if I miss a swish, I probably am still going to make it.
Right. Right. Love that mindset. Love that mindset. And we're in the fourth quarter now, Coach, so we're just about to wrap up. But what I usually do with my guests is we have a little bit of fun. So I'm going to put you in the hot seat, Coach. And how it's going to go is, I'll give you 10 seconds and you need to name five things. So for example, I might say, Coach, I'm going to give you 10 seconds to name five NBA teams, for example. And when you hear the countdown, which will be starting now,
nine,
that's when you can just...
eight. Seven,
list them off.
Six, five.
Sound good?
Yep, sounds good, man. Let's get it.
Perfect. Okay, so let's start nice and easy. So, Coach, you have 10 seconds to name five NBA players.
NBA players, ten, you got Patty Mills, nine, Kevin Durant, eight, Kobe Bryant,
seven,
Michael Jordan,
six,
Allen Iverson, five, Ray Allen.
Oh, he's keeping it going. I love it.
Steve Nash.
Nice.
Tim Duncan.
Starting strong, bet. Okay, so the second one. 10 seconds to name five NBA teams.
Sixers, Hornets, Raptors, ten, Spurs, nine, Lakers, Clippers.
Eight, oh, seven, coaches, fly through six, this. Oh my goodness. Okay, see, so Coach, I'm gonna give you the heads up early. These next two guests in the past have stumbled upon, because these names are mentioned, but usually around a certain time of the season. Now, you being a coach, or us as coaches, we kind of have the slight edge because we hear these names a little bit more often than the regular athlete. So let's see how you do on these next two. So 10 seconds to name five NBA coaches.
Oh, ten, man. Current coaches? Eight, oh, seven, gosh. Six, Steve five, Kerr.
Yep.
Doc Rivers.
Three, two, one.
Steve Nash.
Okay, I'll take it.
You got three.
I'll take those three. And the last four, you have 10 seconds to name five international players in the NBA.
International players. Ten, we got Luka Doncic.
Nine, of course.
Eight,
seven.
Patty Mills.
Six, yes, sir.
Five. Four, three, two.
What's your boy, Joker?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Joker, man, that's terrible. Yeah. That's terrible, man. I got to get better at that.
And the final three. Now, these last three really come down to personal preference. So, next one is 10 seconds to name five basketball movies.
Air Bud.
Okay.
What's your boy, the one that seven, just dropped with Adam six, Sandler? Hoosiers.
Oh, yeah.
Glory three, Road and two, Space Jam.
Nice. Nice. And the final two. give me, coach, your own top five players of all time.
Jordan, LeBron, Durant, Allen Iverson, best of all time, I'll give it Kobe.
Nice. And that is the fourth quarter absolutely complete. Listeners, seriously, personally for myself, this was an absolute treat. For the listeners, again, you know, we've given you a lot of stuff to take. Just plant that seed and watch the plant grow. And before we wrap up, don't worry, the information to find him will be in the description. But coach, for the listeners who are tuned in right now and just want to become the better athlete, become the better contributor, whether that's just getting drills, skills, or just learning the game on a higher level, where can they find you?
Yeah, so they can go on Instagram at _CoachJB, or they can just email me directly, justin@hoopstudy.com.
Nice. Perfect. Listeners, there it is. This is myself and the author of Aim for Swishes, Coach Justin, signing out.